I'm calling to order the Bolton Planning and Zoning Commission regular meeting, 7:31 p.m., August 13th, 2025. And I am appointing Kawan Gordon for Arlene Fiano and Tom Crockett for Jeremy Flick and Diane D'Annunzio for Steve Clark. First item of business is the approval of minutes.
Make a motion to approve the minutes as written.
Jim
Are there
Crawley,
any
I second it.
I'll get Jim Crawley.
changes? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any
Aye.
opposed? Any abstentions?
See.
It's five ayes, zero noes, one abstention.
Was
Next
that?
item of business.
I'm sorry, was that Kawan that abstained? Or
Yeah.
yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Vivi.
Residents forum. We have one resident here. Do you want to talk? Andrew says no.
Talk about anything you want.
Yeah.
Okay, staff reports.
Oh boy. You know what? I always catch me off guard here. Sorry.
Hey, we move along here.
What was that?
We move along here.
We do. Let's see. I'm trying to pull it up here. We've had just no applications, obviously, because you would know about them unless they've been like zoning permits, which Mike can tell you about. But just a lot of questions. We've had questions about allowable uses in certain zones. We've had questions about storage units, chickens, lot line reconfiguration questions. One of the things we have done is we've again met, now this is the second time, with the cider mill property owner. Things actually seem to be getting interesting there. I think he actually has a developer and he may be ready to come in with something. He's talked now with the Water Pollution Control Authority as well. So I'm not going to hold my breath, but it does seem like the inquiries are increasing and he's asking for a lot of information. So I think that's good. Ongoing work with Connecticut Countryside. That's been about it from here.
Mike, did you have anything?
Yeah, I was just trying to see if I could get get a quick report generated from OpenGov regarding the permits. We don't, you know, I review on top of the administrative zoning permits, as you know, I review any special event permits, and also if there's I guess I think they're referred to as solicitor's permits. Anybody that is getting that permit from the first from the town administrator's office, I also review to make sure that it's not some sort of extension or some weird conflict with commercial the commercial zoning regulations. But you know, I think we probably average, and I'm trying to look at the numbers of most recently to give you a sense of volume. We probably average on between 6 and 10 applications a month, I would guess, of varying obviously complexity. we've shifted some of that volume. You know, I know annual report, everybody's trying to crunch their data and show as much volume and review as possible, but we've shifted some of the reviews so that I do them as part of the building permit application for certain projects, because it's far less complicated for the applicant. So we apply the zoning review fee as part of the building permit submission for something like solar, so that it's a single application. So the same review happens, same fees are collected, but they fill out one form instead of two. It's much easier for the office. It's much easier for the applicant. And everything is in one place. Aside from that, as Patrice said, you know, just sort of the standard, can I do this? And how mad will you be if I do that? We've also continued to work with CAI and the assessor's office to try to get everything compiled so we can get it shipped out to their office and they can start reviewing and updating the town's parcel map. Hopefully we can move that project forward. And so we've been kind of figuring out what we need to get over to them and the best way to transmit this data, because there's only one version of it. And so we're working with the assessor's office, and she's been cataloging all of the changes in the lot line reconfigurations, in parcel combinations, free splits, and subdivision approvals. She has spent a lot of time categorizing and now has a basically a database of all those changes that she can now maintain. And they've gone through and updated manually all the paper maps. So we have some backups and things will be far more organized. So we've been kind of figuring out the best way to handle that. But other than that, things have been quiet on the complaint front. One of the complaints resolved itself because two neighbors spoke to each other and found a path forward, which is unusual, but is certainly a bright spot we don't see very often. Other than that, it's just been business as usual.
Thank you. Okay, it looks like there was no particular old business.
No.
Or new business.
Nope.
Ongoing discussion, Bolton subdivision and zoning regulations. And we also have the sign regulations.
Those are part of your zoning regulations. So I know we had discussed this. I don't know what you want to discuss tonight, but just so you know what you have in front of you there, the top one, I believe, is our actual sign regulation currently.
Yes.
The second one, I believe, is Tollins, mm-hmm, sign regulation, which has been recently redone and has been reviewed by an attorney and adopted. And actually, I think Mike has been a part of that. And the third one is just there as another example from Ridgefield, only because it's short.
Yeah, I noticed that the Bolton regulations are the thickest.
Well, there is one that's thicker, and that would be Weathersfield. But other than that, I just feel like we can do this a little simpler.
How does Ridgefield line up? It's a very small town, right?
It's a very wealthy town.
That's true.
It's a very wealthy town, is that what you said?
Yes. Yeah,
yeah, it is. I don't know. I actually was going to give a call over to see how they like them. I mean, the request I made was, if you have a sign cone that you, code that you love, could you send it to me? So they were one of the responses. I mean, I don't know if it's easy to use. I don't know when it was adopted, but I certainly could get that information. And this is just, this is background information for you guys to take a look at. If you want to discuss it tonight, we can. If you want to go back to the table, we can do that. The table you had also asked us for last time, but on the table, we didn't get very far. There's a little arrow showing where we ended in discussion on May 8th, and then we got busy doing codification and other things. So we never got back to it.
Jim Cropley, did you say that Mike did the one in Talon?
Yes, I wrote the Talon regs for Talon.
So have you had a chance to review, to look at Ridgefield's or?
No, I don't think he has.
Do you want the honest answer or the short answer?
I want whatever's better.
I have not had a chance to review it, partially because of time, but partially
seems
because
specific,
in the limited interactions that I've had with that community, I find them to be more complicated than I expect you're trying to be.
Okay. Because I read Collins and I thought Collins was pretty good.
Collins are in the regs that I have written and reviewed, as far as I can tell, sort of, and I'm not saying this because I wrote them, because it took us a long time and we had a Halloran Sage partner with us to make sure we were doing them correctly to actually achieve content neutral regulations, which is what signage regulations are supposed to be. We also wrote regulations for Mansfield. They're more complicated than Tallinn. They are better, but they're longer and just a bit more complicated because they've got, you know, they're unique in that they have really intense development in certain areas and then really, really rural areas. And that all comes together to make things a little bit more complicated. But Tallinn's regulations are, you know, have been in place a couple of years now, and we have not had any issues, nor, you know, commission has not had any sort of buyer's remorse for the way that that was adopted.
What about a quick thing? So I did review both Tallinn and the Ridgefield PDFs that actually, yeah, the PDFs that were provided. My first like 10,000 foot quick summarization of the Ridgefield signage regulations, I thought were more straightforward. I did like the chart that they provided within. I thought it was pretty clear. The Tallinn one, there was some language in there which I thought was a bit legal, that made me a little challenging to, for the, you know, the common layperson to digest. But you know, it's obviously written in a way to cover, you know, from A to Z. So then the Ridgefield one, in my opinion.
Just a couple comments I had. I'm kind of impressed that Ridgefield has had this in effect since May 1st, 2007. I would think they would make changes if it didn't work. And it hasn't looked like it's been amended or anything else. So, you know, it might be a pretty good guide. And the other question I had for Mike on Tallinn, did this pass unanimously, the planning and zoning out there?
Yes.
The next discussion.
Yep.
No problems. Nothing really had to change very much. I mean, it looks fine to me. But
the Ridgefield one actually had, it says some of these things were amended 7/14/2023.
Well, I just saw
the A-23-2 was amended. There's a couple of notes at the bottom. If you look at the bottom of the pages, so there were some amendments made.
Okay, I see that.
'07. Tallinn has the same attorneys we do as well.
So I just pulled up Ridgefield. So the main focus, and hopefully you'll see this as you compare Ridgefield's to Tallinn's, are that Tallinn's really are based upon location. And so we don't say that, you know, the Boy Scouts can put up a certain type of a sign, or a realtor can put up a certain type of a sign, or a business or a political sign. We moved entirely away from content-based regulations. Reed Gilbert is a Supreme Court case in the United States that says that you cannot regulate signs based on its content. So, you know, for their type of sign, line four, temporary political signs, right? Real estate signs, historic structure plaques, all of these signs require you to look at the content of the sign to determine how it's regulated. And while it's okay to have to look at the sign to know what to do with it, you can't base your regulations on what the sign says in determining how it's allowed, because you're essentially curtailing the signage based on speech. So they're saying a community sign board is as approved by the commission. So the commission may allow a community sign board that's 8x10 and it gets put up because the, you know, the Boy Scouts or a church group says we want to put this up. Well, if some commercial entity like Dollar General wanted to put the same sign up and do the same thing but have a different message, you can't say, well, now it's not allowed because you're a business trying to do the same thing. So we really put a lot of effort into moving away from that and regulating based on location and other qualities of the sign. In Connecticut, we have our own sort of fun nuance in that we have a state court case. It's Arisian. I can't remember who it's in, Arisian versus whatever, but it's Arisan, I think. And it basically defines what towns can regulate, and essentially it's commercial speech. There's a definition for that. I have a memo I think I put together that kind of outlines these cases. But essentially, if it does not qualify as commercial speech, towns can't regulate it. So we support the police. I love CPTV, go yard goats, you know, things that just are someone's personal opinion. They're not trying to sell something. They're not profiting off of it. That's not signage. That's not commercial speech. There may be other things we can regulate if it's in the right of way, if it's creating a sightline hazard, you know, yada, yada, yada. But if someone puts a sign up in their front yard that expresses an opinion, I love the town of Bolton, that does not qualify as a sign. And so we spent a lot of time agonizing over that in Tallinn. And you'll see one of the things that is very liberal in its approach is how we would regulate signage in a residential area, for someone that's putting something up that may advertise, like a contractor that's at their house or something. We don't really get into that temporary sign issue. But as you think about this and decide how to go forward, just kind of bear in mind that it's really commercial speech that we have control over.
So in other words, when somebody puts a series of 6-foot-high letters along their property that says, let's go Brandon, you can't regulate that.
You cannot.
If it's in the town right-of-way, you can. But other than that.
Well, yeah, I was up for a year and a half in our town.
I had a situation not long ago in Willington where a person had a sign up in their front yard. It said, I'm an a-hole, not running for anything, just wanted a sign. And someone called because their child was passing by this sign to and from the bus or something, and they found it very offensive.
What does that mean, Mommy?
Nothing we could do about it. It's not signage, it's free speech.
Yeah. Okay, so that's good background for me to read these things. Marilee was sort of raising her eyebrows at some of the restrictions in Ridgefield too.
Yeah, the Connecticut case is based on an issue in Branford, I believe, or Milford, where there was someone protesting. I think it was a permits being issued for a town deer hunt or something, and they put up a big sign that said, "Did anybody ask the deer?" And it kind of went all the way around, the statute was amended to say if it's not commercial speech, towns can't regulate it. But I will, I'll forward that little memo that has those three cases. I'll I'll pull it out and we can get it out to you guys.
I was also looking at the real estate sign and I said, gosh, that's specific. I don't know. It was...
Right.
Yeah, I thought every column looked really good. I didn't realize you wrote it, but I thought it looked really good. I mean, and I actually went through and read ours, and I think that would be a huge step forward for us going in that other direction.
I'm going to just remind you, too, the reason why we're even looking at these, not only to hopefully try and simplify them, but we had an instance where we were trying to determine the allowable sign area for one of the recent projects. And Mike sent an email and said, I come up with this. Danielle in the building office looked at it. She goes, well, I come up with this. And then I looked at it and I came up with a third calculation. So if the three of us can't even come to the same conclusion, it has to be simpler. Because if we can't do it, then the average person outside is going to come up with a number and then they're not going to be happy when we say, no, that's not correct.
Yeah.
And we've had trouble in the past with even some of the sign companies that have looked at our regulations and have had trouble coming up with a figure that we would approve. So, Jim, were you on the original committee? Was anybody on the commission now on the original committee when they did the whole sign regulation?
No, because it wasn't, I was not, but there wasn't, it wasn't all planning and zoning. They actually had some people from the town. I think George sat on it.
Right. No, I understand. It was a committee made up of business owners and, right. I just didn't know who from the planning and zoning commission had been on it.
No.
Maybe Arlene or Adam.
Yeah, Adam. Jeff Scalia was definitely on it.
Okay.
Mr. Pagini was definitely on it.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep.
Anything else about signs?
I just had a question. We could just pretty much follow Tollins if we agreed to that without a whole lot of changes or anything else. I mean, would Mike be in trouble for sharing the information he did with Tollins with us? I don't know how that works.
No. I mean, I wrote them for Tollins, but I wrote them.
I think it would be public information. But I'm just trying to check it out. I mean, it's, I didn't want to see Mike get in trouble. I know we have to.
Well, they're public domain, but I mean, he wouldn't offer them if there was. And I'm sure, Mike, I don't know, there's got to be some things we'd have to tweak anyway.
Yeah, I mean, we would just take the same approach in how the document is organized and how it regulates, signs across, residential, commercial, et cetera. But, as easy as it would be to just do a find replace and take out Tollin and write Bolton, I think you're going to want to look at a little bit more. So I think we'll be fine to use that as a framework.
Well, I was just thinking along with Town of Tollin says, we're paying Mike to do this and he's sharing information that we paid for. And I know it's public domain and public information, but I don't know if that caused any problems for you.
The time that was associated was more related in figuring out how to get them to what you're looking at from where they were, which is, closer to where you guys are now. And there was a lot of time spent with the commission talking about the approach and looking at various regulations and talking about the applicable case law and going through multiple rounds of review with Haller and Sage. And it was just more about the sort of the time spent. I there would be no issues with that.
That's all. I mean, if you're not worried about it, I'm not going to be worried about it, but I just think it'd be important for us to know that you're not putting your possibly causing yourself any problems. So
I appreciate that, but no, I think we can certainly forge ahead.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. I do have a follow-up question, more so for Mike. So in distinguishing between the Tollin and the Ridgefield, when it comes to the ability to unambiguously enforce provisions. It seems like the Tallinn sample would be more clear, but how much of a headache would it be to actually enforce the Tallinn, what Tallinn has versus what the Ridgefield has?
So I guess some of the background with Tallinn is that they decided at the start of COVID, because everybody was in complete chaos and it was just who knows what, they just essentially, the commission decided, we're going to suspend any enforcement related to signs unless there's a safety concern. We're not pulling temporary signs. We're not sending violations. We're not going out and ripping up this and that. Everybody's trying to survive. Businesses are doing whatever. So we're just not getting involved. So fast forward to, you know, post-COVID, and the commission realized they had done this temporary suspension and there hadn't been any issues. So they sort of had an opportunity to see that their concern when, you know, as is the case with all regulations, that if they're not in place, we're going to lose control of everything and we're going to become the Las Vegas Strip. Well, that didn't happen. And so they had the benefit of being able to say, okay, well, left to do what everybody does on their own, the last couple of years have really not been that big of a deal. And so we wrote the regulation to allow for quantities and sign types that were much more in line with what you expect to see and what people might want to put up. So honestly, since that regulation has been adopted, we have not had any enforcement actions or issues related to compliance.
Mike, when were they adopted?
Oh,
approximately
23.
So they've been in place for well over a year.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Certainly. I would say more than two. I just can't remember. I can get the date.
No, that's okay. I just so that everybody understands, you've had some time for people to react to them or to complain about them, or if there needed to be some enforcement, you might have seen that by now.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they don't have the date in the bottom there. But they would have.
I think what I would do, Tom, and I just from a staff perspective, is you might want to look at, because I don't know how you guys don't enforce the sign regulations. I mean, I know you look at them occasionally for projects, and it's been probably a while. That's usually staff thing, but it might be interesting for you to think about a certain type of sign or whatever and say, you know, this is how I think we regulate it in Bolton, and is that how you want it regulated, and does the Tallinn regulation do that? And so, for example, the thing I'm thinking about in particular, because I know it's come up recently, was the signs on canopies for like gas stations. I know we don't allow them in Bolton. We allow colors, but we don't allow like insignia and logos and that side of thing on, unless the ZBA grants a variance, which they shouldn't, but they have. I don't know how the Tallinn regulation deals with that. I don't like it. I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you know, so is something like that going to be a problem? Do you still not want to allow those kind of things on a canopy, or are you willing to let that go? So it's things like that. You might want to think about examples of types of signs that you feel very strongly about, and just make sure that if it's something that you really feel strongly about, that somehow it's covered. Again, we were trying to get at this from not only simplifying it, but being able to calculate it rather easily. And I think, like Mike said, get away from the content issue.
So my feeling is, you know, we keep talking all the time about promoting more business in town and how do we get more business? And, you know, I think the easier we can make it for businesses to come into town, I mean, that's what we want. You know, not that we want these big billboards or something like that, but I think, you know, I don't know. I just think that we need to make it, you know, we talk about bringing more business to town. What can we do? And yet we have regulations that, you know, like, I don't see why we can't have a sign, you know, like a mobile sign on a canopy. I mean, they do enough color and everything else that, you know, obviously it's pretty clear what it is, but, you know, I mean, I just,
Well,
I don't.
the regulation is on page 18, and it's up there near the top, canopy sign. This is a Tolland.
Yep.
Well, I'm just saying that I think looking at ours, looking at Tolland, looking at Ridgefield, I liked Tolland's. I'm not saying I think we have to make some adjustments to it because we're a different town than Tolland is, obviously. You know, but
well,
I think we ought to
impress. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think we need to make it, you know, we talk about bringing businesses into town. If we don't make it easy for them and clear what they can do and what they can't do, then I think we're hurting ourselves.
I think that what impressed me the most is how easy it was for me to find that in the regulations.
You passed the test, Marilee.
Yeah, well, no, you passed the test.
So the question is, again, that's something you don't allow now. The Tolland regulation obviously does allow it. So it's things like that. Do you want to change your, you know, the way you view those things? That's all I'm saying.
I think we should. I mean, I don't think we should tear this thing apart, but I mean, I think we should definitely go over it. And, you know, if there's some things that we want to change, we can, but,
sure.
You know, I think we, I mean, I was on the commission when we adopted these things, and you know, it was just insane. You know, I mean, one, they were very complex. Two, I don't think they were fair for businesses. You know, I mean, I don't know. I think we should move forward and come up with, you know, we can review the Tolland's, and if we want to make some changes, that's fine. And I think we should work on that.
Something that you know, might be easier to generate opinions about would be that as you're thinking about this, as you're riding around, you know, Eastern Connecticut over the next month between now and September, if you see a sign, be it in Bolton or not, that you think is ugly, something that you wouldn't want, you know, we can certainly back into the regulations if we know what you don't like. You know, it's harder to think about what you might allow or whatever, because you're trying to paint that picture in your mind as you go. But if you've seen a specific type of sign, you know, something that shocked me about Tolland's regs, when I did my first red line, I proposed that we removed the allowance for roof mounted signs, because most towns don't allow them. I personally don't think they look all that great. And they just tend to, I don't think they contribute to what we're normally shooting for, but there's a couple of small businesses in town that have roof mounted signs, and the commission felt very strongly that they remain conforming. So if you see a sign that you think looks terrible, tell, you know, that's just as helpful as you know, where you might want to go with the reg.
And if at all possible, if you can get a picture of it on your phone, sometimes that'll help so we can understand what you're talking about.
I agree with Jim. It'd be a shame to lose a business over a sign. And, you know, it could be a little more lenient and see what happens. I mean, it's just really hard to get into businesses anywhere, just about any town. So I know it's not easy, but maybe it's something we give a good hard look at.
Anything else on signs? Okay, let's go to the...
Can I ask what you'd like from us for next meeting?
Sounds like we need to do homework, and we're going to be looking at, going to be looking at the Tolland regulations as a basis for what to do.
Would you like staff to tweak some of these items in the Tolland regulations?
We're going to do homework, and we're going to read them. We're going to read the regulations, and we're going to suggest tweaks, and then we'll give them to the next time.
Okay.
Okay, to start the looking at the table, I'd like to ask about the abbreviations.
If you turn the page over,
yeah,
backside, the very end, it should tell you all the abbreviations. AZ is administrative zoning permit, AOR as of right, SUP special use permit, SP site plan.
Okay, so my first question is, what's the difference between AZ and AOR in practice?
It's administrative zoning and as of right.
Okay, but even when you have as of right, isn't there some sort of review?
I'd have to see where what it was referenced on to know.
Daycare, child, family, group, daycare center in the R1, R2, and R3 zone. I think they're allowed by statute. Farming, but not as a farm stand, as an exist. So farming is allowed as of right. Home occupations with non-resident employees, on-site or on-site customers, that's as of right.
Okay, but you'd still look at their site plan to make sure that they met the setbacks and the and any parking requirements and lighting requirements and so on.
A lot of that stuff, well, like with daycares, for example, if they meet the in-home daycare requirements of the statute, then they're allowed as of right. So if they were constructing something new, of course, we would look at all of that. But if someone came in and said, I want to take care of four children in my home, statute says we have to allow that by right.
Is there a limit? Would the state be involved with that, with any kind of inspection?
Anything under six is as of right. Beyond six, okay, it then is regulated.
Thank you.
So for something that's as of right, there would be no permit.
There would be nothing that they would need from zoning, no.
Okay, but they would still have to comply with the other regulations.
If they were constructing something, then they would get all of that. If they would need, they're still licensed through the state. So they don't just get to do it sort of, you know, solo on their own, but they don't need to seek approval up front from the town to conduct the use unless they exceed six.
Okay.
The only other one now looking through these is we do allow six hens, chickens. However, we do make some requirements of that. You have to have an enclosure and all this other thing. So maybe the AOR there should actually be the hens in association with the regulation that requires the building and all of that. We didn't get that far. So we, that's, I just happened to look at it because you mentioned AOR.
Okay, and an administrative zoning permit, I gather that is entirely handled by staff.
Correct.
Okay, so somebody comes in and says, I want to operate this business and this zone, and it's an existing building, they're not making any changes to it, and you say, and you issue them an administrative zoning permit, yes, you can do this.
Right. So, for example, one of the items, the very first one, ADUs subject to conditions, administrative zoning permit in the R1, R2, and R3 zone. So they come in and get their permit from the zoning officer. They're probably going to get a building permit as well, but that would be an administrative zoning permit where they don't have to come to the commission for it. If you look also at the top, what we had talked about in through the May meeting, we have art studios, galleries, and museums, and you all had decided that in the general business and the neighborhood business zones, those things could be administrative zoning permits and didn't need to come to the commission because you felt like you're in a general business zone or whatever. So they should be allowed in that regard. We did have a couple questions left on the RMUZ zone and the GMUIZ zone as to whether they should remain special use permits or whether they should be administrative zoning permits. So when you're looking at this table, the things that are in red that have no question mark are things that have been changed by the commission or suggested to be changed. And then the things with the question marks we discussed, but we hadn't made a decision about.
And then let's see, what happens, what's the practical effect of requiring site plan review?
Well, if somebody applies for a site plan review?
If somebody applies for a use or a project that requires site plan review in the table, what happens?
Comes to the Planning and Zoning Commission, you have 65 days to make a decision.
Okay.
So you have specific requirements in the zoning regulations as to what you want to see on a site plan, depending on, you know, what if it's a brand new use or if it's a new building or whatever that's allowed by site plan, but not special permit. There's no hearing required. You can have a hearing if you want, but whatever you do, you have to decide within 65 days of the application.
Is there any requirement to notify abutters?
For site plan?
No.
Offhand, I don't remember, but I don't think so.
Okay.
I know statutorily there isn't. I just don't know if our regulations require it.
Okay, I'll look at that.
Okay.
But when you have a special use permit, that has to have a public hearing.
Has to by statute. Yep.
It has to have a public hearing, and you would have all the things that go with it: the notification, the postings, sign postings. Okay.
Yep.
What is the effect of exempt? Do we exempt all town facilities from planning and zoning regulations?
Yes, we do. That was an ordinance that was passed back in 1970 something, I think.
Okay.
So where I know it's been exempt is what is reason it's represented on the table as exempt.
So that's why the fire department can have an electronic message board, nobody else.
Exactly.
Can.
Yep.
Okay.
And that was a big discussion when that happened. I don't know if you remember. I don't actually think the Planning and Zoning Commission was involved.
I don't think so. No.
Yeah. Because unless it was an 824, and honestly, I don't remember at the time. And I actually don't think it was, because there was no money. It was fire department money spent that they had from donations, I believe. I don't believe the town spent any money on that.
Okay, that's what I needed to know before we went on.
So the town exempt resolution was May 15th, 1995, Board of Selectmen.
That pretty customary for all towns?
I can't. Mike probably knows more towns than I do, but in all the towns I've worked for, the answer is yes. In Connecticut.
Okay, so it looks like the first use after discussion at the May 8th meeting is fitness center.
Right. So it says AZ question mark in the GB zone. So that would be, this is either staff, actually we had also, Kwan, you had given us a pretty, a table that had a lot of notes to it, and we tried to incorporate your suggestions as well. as what staff thought into this. So this was the staff suggestion. So the question is, we wanted to know if you wanted to do that through administrative zoning permit for under the GB zone. Currently it's allowed in the GMUIZ zone under a special use permit. And again, do you want to change that or not?
Okay, I would, if I had my druthers, I would have it AZ in both zones.
Do you want to do some kind of consensus or something with regard to this, or do you want to take a vote? I'd rather not take a vote.
Does anybody else have an opinion on that?
There you go.
I think AZ is fine in both zones.
Yeah, I do too. Jim Cropley.
Me too. I agree.
Okay, so we have general agreement on that.
Kwan?
Oh. You have a thumbs up.
He's trying not to wake the baby. He's going to give us a thumbs up. The baby sleeper. So cute.
Okay. Grocery convenience store. Why do we differentiate between a grocery store and a convenience store?
Does that mean gas too?
No, motor vehicle gas stations are separate. This would just be a convenience store. I don't know if you did. So we've lumped them together as a full grocery store or a convenience store because they're basically selling similar things.
Okay, but we have a separate line for grocery store. That's what my...
Right. So the question is, so this was what we found. So you had grocery or convenience store allowed by special use permit in the GMUIZ, and then you had grocery stores allowed by special permit in the GB, the NB, and that was it. So I don't know whether you want to keep them separate, you want to call them the same thing, and put the use how you want to allow it across the board. Do you think they need to be separated? Michael, is there a reason you think that grocery stores and convenience stores should be separate? Any reason that you can think of?
Me? Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's okay.
I think grocery and convenience, grocery and convenience are generally, significantly different in size.
Right.
And groceries sell fresh products and food, whereas convenience stores tend to sell prepackaged items. They tend to sell tobacco products and everything related to that. What was the last thing? There also tends to be a significant difference between grocery and convenience with regard to hours of operation. So if you have a convenience store, So you may not want a convenience store somewhere that's going to be open, 20 hours a day in the same place. You might be okay with a small neighborhood grocer.
Right. So you may have to make, I don't know if you'll have to make a definition for what the difference is, or if you think it could be understood. And in that case, I would suggest that you take and make them two lines. One that could be convenience store, one could be grocery store, and then you can allow them how you want in the different zones.
I think that is what I would like to do.
Okay. So convenience stores, would you allow, I assume you'd allow them in your general business zone. I don't know if you want to allow them in the neighborhood business zone. And I don't know what other zone you might want to allow. Currently you only allow them in the GMUIZ, it looks like.
Well, I could think of only one, and that's the A&A store, right? Well, it's not called A&A anymore. I don't know what it's called.
A1.
A1. Is that the only one in town?
I mean, would you consider All Town Fresh a convenience store? Or are you talking about convenience that has no relation to a gas station?
True. What about Dollar General? Let's get groceries. It's got everything.
You could just lump it all together and call it retail if you don't think it's that big of an issue.
Yeah. And what is the difference? Now, what is the zone that A1 is in on Route 85?
Neighborhood business.
Neighborhood business?
Neighborhood business.
Pre-day zoning.
Where Dollar General is in a different one, right?
Right.
Okay.
I would say that predated zone too.
Oh, Jeff.
Yeah. Predated zoning for ETC.
Okay.
So would you call?
I think they are. I think they can have separate definitions, and they have different sizes, and so on. So I would say that a convenience store could have site plan review in general business and neighborhood business. And GMUIZ.
So what do we classify Dollar General as?
Retail, probably.
It's a base. Remember, we talked about square footage too?
Right.
That was another consideration.
How are we gonna define what a convenience store and a grocery? I know Mike said they have, fresh food, but like A1 is a convenience store, I would think, and I haven't been in there in ages, but they used to have produce and stuff. I mean,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think we just need to figure out how we're gonna differentiate the two different ones. Unless we do it by size.
They do have fresh farm food there. They don't make sandwiches there anymore, though.
So one way that you could approach it would be to call it all, retail. And you could include essentially a caveat that if any retail, any retail store located in the zones that you're thinking about, any retail store located in the whatever RMUZ, if they sell food products, you could require that at least 75% of those be fresh food products or something like that. So you call it all retail, but if somebody wants to have a retail store in a certain zone and they want to sell food, they can't just sell Twinkies and candy and M&Ms. They've got to have a portion of the floor area dedicated to the sale of fresh food. So you can have convenience store in the GB zone, but that same store in the RMUZ would have to have 50% of their floor space dedicated to fresh food. One that I'm just pulled up, any store commonly known as a supermarket, food store, or grocery store with at least 60% of the gross floor area dedicated to the retail sale of fresh and or frozen meat, seafood, poultry, fruits, and vegetables, including dairy or bakery products.
Is that the definition of grocery?
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
The other is convenience.
Yeah. Anything that doesn't fall into that could be convenience.
Yeah, that makes sense. I just think we need to differentiate, because like some of the convenience stores sometimes sell apples and bananas and whatever, but it's just a small percentage.
Very small.
So then going back, All right. Let's take Highland Park Market, since you're all familiar with that, Target, and a small convenience store, 7-Eleven, okay? Which I think is a convenience store. 7-Eleven is obviously different from the other two. Target now has a whole area of a grocery department.
But I don't think it's 60%.
It is not. And I might even go higher than 60%, but for that reason, but it is not. But to me, Target is more like Dollar General. It's more, to me, it's retail. And grocery store is a grocery store. It's, I don't know. To me, it's almost common sense. Like you don't need the definition, but sure. We don't have one now, but so it's been working okay, but.
I don't know if, you know, I don't know how amenable we are to change, because 10 years from now, this may be a totally different conversation. The world is changing so fast. You know, should we keep it a little more open and easy for things to slide in and out as the world changes? Or do we want to define specifically and then with more boundaries as to how things are going to develop? I think the square footage is more important than just about anything.
Yeah.
Right. So currently you allow convenience stores separate from grocery stores, separate from retail uses. And we don't have a definition for any one of those items. And we haven't had any issues. When Dollar General came in, they were retail. When All Town Fresh came in, they were attached to the gas station. Of course, there was something already there like it, but they did make it bigger. So it hasn't been an issue. I don't know if you want to just separate the three, convenience, grocery store, and retail as it is now, and then just put them in the zones and the way you want to be able to approve them.
Can I ask a question? What is the concern with, is the desire to have them separate be, is it based on not wanting one of those types of, I don't want convenience stores in certain zones, or is it more of a concern about the way in which a convenience store might operate? Like I mentioned, hours of operation and things like that. So are you more worried about, we want to make sure this thing doesn't get out of control, or you just want to protect certain zones from having convenience stores at all? If it's the first, you could just call it all retail, and you could require that any retail or similar type of establishment and reference operating hours requires a special permit. Because a grocery store is unlikely to be open at 4 a.m. and they're unlikely to stay open until midnight or later. And your traditional convenience store tends to operate pretty early to pretty late.
Even still, a grocery store is probably, you're not going to allow it outside of like a general business zone anyway. So it almost doesn't matter what the hours would be, because it's not sitting in a residential zone. Or maybe even near one. But I agree with you, Mike. The convenience stores can be open some weird hours. We used to have a 24-hour Stop and Shop in Enfield. I don't think it does that anymore. But there are some grocery stores that are open late. But I don't know what the commission's feeling is on what you just asked. So,
well, what I was thinking about, now that we've had this discussion, is just say retail. We're just gonna have retail.
All right.
And then in the neighborhood business zone, it would be up to 5,000 square feet. Would be, you do it by site plan, and, but there,
okay.
there would
you'd
be
have, So you'd have retail up to 5,000 square feet.
And then
retail over that? So there'd be two retails?
That would not be permitted in the neighborhood business zone.
How big is 5,000 square feet in relationship to like an all fresh or a smaller convenience store?
I think it's about...
This is probably 5,000 square feet.
Yeah.
We're looking at...
Approximately.
Yes.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty close.
But I'm just putting a number on it.
Right.
55.
Which could change.
Right.
The number is We just we just don't want a Walmart super center in a neighborhood business zone.
Exactly.
So you're saying retail up to 5,000 square feet would be okay in the neighborhood business zone?
Right.
By what kind of use?
Retail store.
No, I'm sorry. By what permission? Sorry.
Site plan.
Okay. And then grocery stores would be considered retail over 5,000 square feet instead of calling them grocery stores?
That's right. Your typical.
So retail,
what I used to think of as a typical grocery store like Grand Union or First National,
which no one remembers.
I do. But you have to have a second category. You can't, if you're going to have one that says up to 5,000 square feet, then your other one will be just plain old retail.
Over 5,000.
And bigger.
For instance, if it was bigger, I don't see any need for a special use permit in the general business zone. That would just be site plan in the general business zone. For the larger.
Okay, so you're saying general retail. Okay. So in the general business zone, retail over 5,000 square, whatever the number is, would be site plan. Neighborhood business not allowed, right?
Right.
RMUZ.
I'd have the same restriction as on neighborhood business because.
Okay. GMUIZ or industrial zone, you wouldn't allow it. How about GMUIZ? Right now,
I think special use permit would be appropriate for that.
For GMUIZ?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So you've got, and then retail up to 5,000 is okay in the NB zone only, or would you allow it in all the other zones as well?
I think we would allow it in all the other zones.
Yes. Yeah.
So just site plan. So site plan in GB, NB, RMUZ, and GMUIZ, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a question. Should we do a little homework about this 5,000 square feet?
Yes.
So,
something that I just wanted to mention because it touches back on a comment that was made a few minutes ago. We did some amendments to the design commercial zone in Wellington several years ago. During early COVID, and you know, we got to this point where we're trying to go back through and we're looking at uses and how we wanted to regulate them and site plan a special permit. We have a zone where we do very similar things to what you're talking about, which is where we make it very easy to do things that are in the small sort of neighborhood context. And then we require special permits for things that are larger. But ultimately what we decided was instead of trying to the point that was made, think about the future and how all these things are changing. I probably mentioned it before that the use I keep coming back to is axe throwing. No one heard of it. And then it became a thing for a couple of years and everyone's like, well, what's axe throwing? Is it recreation? Is it entertainment? You know, is it a gym? I've never done it. Can't say I'm interested, but more importantly, what we did is just, we kept it simple. We kept the uses that we sort of knew were going to likely be in play, and we adopted language under the special permit category, which says that for any use type which is not defined within, citing the section as being allowable or prohibited, the commission may issue a special permit in accordance with Article 13 if such use is found to be in harmony with the purpose of the underlying zone and the POCD. So we just went through this original maybe a month ago, and the commission basically said the use you're proposing is yes, different, but is so similar to the uses that are on the list that adding more lines to the regulations for another use, which is substantially the same, was not a good use of anybody's time. So, you know, we could do that as a catch-all so we don't have to worry about trying to capture everything.
I think that sounds really good.
That's great.
Yeah. I do too.
Very good.
Is that Wellington, Mike?
Yeah. It's section 315-504D.
I mean, I, obviously I can send it to you. I wrote it, but
yeah,
it you know, is yeah, yep. Rather than trying to think about the future.
Right. I agree.
Yeah, and that doesn't shut the door on anybody.
Right.
Or anything new that happens to come up that you've never thought about.
Right.
It also took the, it sort of takes the pressure off of staff in trying to determine if something that's been proposed, you know, works or is allowable or it isn't. It basically says the commission can, you can present it to the commission by a special permit and they can look at it and they can make that determination. So it, you know, it's a little bit more neutral and balanced.
Home occupations. That probably also exploded during COVID. But what we're saying is, as of right, in the residential zones, but is that the way we actually do it?
There are restrictions. I was just looking for that here. I was just looking to see. I know we have some restrictions in the regulations, but it's... So we've got quickly for me. Sorry. Seem to find it quickly here. I've got home occupation, an occupation which is customarily or may properly be carried on for compensation entirely within a dwelling by the residential occupant thereof. But I really thought we had in special regulations, maybe. I thought we had something in the regulations that basically, you know, depending on if you had a person working for you, then you needed a, you know, somebody who didn't live in your household, then you needed a different, there were other provisions. Maybe it's here. I cannot find it and it's not coming up when I search for it. Not having luck here. Yeah, I get home occupation and then it doesn't actually give me. It just gives me the definition. So I'm not sure where the, I don't know. Special regulation or something.
Yeah, I just went to the index. 6.1H, customary home occupations in all cases shall such occupation be situated in the home of the dwelling. It goes into the percentages and yada, okay. Yada, yada with the requirements.
Sorry.
6.1H. I can chat it to you.
Yeah, no, I've got it right here. So we allow them in different, depending on the zone, because we're the So in the residence zone for permitted uses, we allow, where's the table here? Okay. I don't know. I'm having trouble with my searching. We do have them in the, so we have them in the, I've got special use permit in the RMUZ, special use permit in the GMUIZ, and the ones you were wondering as of right, because they're not listed. So I assume that they are as of right, but again, it's within the requirements of section 6 that Mike just was talking about. In the permitted uses. So you can have a home customary home occupation. In all cases, it shall be situated in the same dwelling. And then it goes into how many people you can have. And there shall be no vehicles associated solely with the business parked on the premises, that kind of stuff.
Now, let's say you have an existing house in the general business zone. Why wouldn't you be able to have a customary home occupation there?
Well, first of all, your general house would be a non-conforming use.
Okay.
But you don't allow home occupations now. And I'm going to guess it might be for that reason. So if you change the use, if you're going to start allowing a business in there, then that's, I mean, it's up to you what you want to do. But
well, yeah. It would be under the same limitations. I think you should be able to do this. What you do in your house in any zone.
Customary home occupations are permitted in the way they're listed in 6.1. That's under residence zones. Some places you'll see they'll put them in under accessory uses, and then you can say they're allowed accessory to a lawfully established residential dwelling, and then it doesn't matter what zone that dwelling is in. But as Patrice and I continue to find out, the Bolton zoning regulations are devoid of really any language related to accessory uses. Other than defining them as subordinate to the primary use, there's not really anything, with the exception of golf courses, in the regulations that says what an accessory use is. So that may be a structure change that could solve that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it does say customary home occupation is permitted by right if it meets the following criteria. That's why R1, R2, and R3 are as of right. So if it has no non-residential employees, no vehicles associated with the business parked on the premises, and no clients come to the premises, then you're good to go. If you have a non-resident employee, or it can then be permitted subject to site plan review. So.
Or one of those things, like a vehicle, right?
Right. Or a trailer, or more than two non-resident employees or whatever. It's spelled out in that section. You can't have an automobile repair business or any kind of small bit engine repair business as a home occupation because of, I'm going to guess, the noise and the smell and whatever.
And hazardous waste, probably.
For home occupations, you probably could just put C, this particular section, but yeah.
Well,
you allow them by special use permit in the RMUZ because that's a zone that's usually in a residential zone area. The house is allowed by right. And, you know, you do allow, it's very limited, but you allow, the house is already allowed. Neighborhood business zone, I believe you allowed houses too still, but a lot of the ones that have come in have been changed into businesses. It's supposed to be small businesses in those, in a neighborhood area. So I don't know, maybe you want to give that one some thought.
Yes, I think we can do that. Well, my goal is that you don't have, is you define the zones, define the zoning districts, and then you don't define in that section all the stuff you can do. You just go to the table. That's what I'm trying to do.
And then if you have a catch-all, like Mike was explaining, then that would help with the table.
Okay, the next one, it says house of worship discuss.
Yes.
You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to eliminate that as a category and just have assembly type occupancy as the use.
And how do you want to allow an assembly type occupancy and where?
I mean, could that be a wedding venue? Would that be an assembly type of occupancy?
I'm thinking, it might be a movie theater, it might be a auditorium, any place where you've got a lot of people coming in their cars and parking and
at specific times.
Right.
Didn't houses of worship, weren't they able to go in any zone in Connecticut without any permits or anything else? Has that changed throughout the years?
Apparently right now it's special use permit across all zones.
I remember Manchester Church.
You only have it as a special use permit in the RMUZ zone. That's why it's here to discuss.
Okay, so
I think there are
what is it in the other zones? Just permitted? Is that what Brown means?
I don't think we could find anything in the other zones. I think that's why the table says what it says.
Oh.
You mean the Methodist Church in St. George on 44 are in residential mixed use?
What I remember.
I tell you, they've been there longer than zoning.
Okay. So probably all the churches we have right now are already in that.
I mean,
you
drive through Manchester, you see churches in all different areas.
Yeah.
You know, and down the bottom of Lydell Street, there's a church, and there's one. They're automatically accepted in any zone without any necessary permits or hearings. I don't know if that exists anymore.
Well,
I don't know.
In my experience in Manchester, there was a time when there was all these old buildings in downtown Manchester.
Right.
And they had cheap rents, and a lot of small churches wanted to go in there and do do startups. And the town was saying, no, there's too many churches. We want retail. We want restaurants.
I don't know how to determine, but I do know it's a lot of areas where the surprise there's a church there because, you know, it'd be a single family residence zone or a two family residence zone. On Spruce Street, there's a church. I don't know. I don't know what's all changed or not.
You know, because it could be as small as one could imagine or as large, you know.
So you have a regulation right now under special permit that basically says, in addition to the following uses require a special permit, regardless of the provisions of any of the following articles: houses of worship, schools and colleges, libraries, and other civic buildings are all in that category. So you are correct. Special use permit is across any house of worship, schools, colleges, libraries, and other civic buildings are all special use permit in that zone. Same thing with mortuaries, funeral homes, and crematoriums.
And special use permit will require public hearings?
Yes. You did have a, I don't know if we classified it as a house of worship, but the place that took over, because they were a church, the place, and they were having
religious classes. Yes, that was
religious classes and communion there on Sundays over on West Street.
I thought it was all.
They bought the restaurant.
Yeah, I thought it was all social service kind of.
It was social service, but one day a week they were doing like overflow communion or something there.
Oh.
Describe that as. But anyway.
I thought you were referring to the King School that was at the end of the building is torn down now. Or wasn't the little, what happened to the little house that was right next to it that was going to be some sort of worship center? There was a residential right there on the corner.
I don't recall it.
Did it not go through?
No, it did not go through, and they did not purchase it. They were thinking of purchasing to do that.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you.
Okay, you don't have to remember this, Patrice. I'll send you a message, but I'd like to get the. You must have this in Excel.
Yes.
I'd like to get that and start start thinking about it, because I just see a lot of things here that.
I think I sent it to you guys in July. I did.
As an Excel file?
July 14th, 2025. You all got it as an Excel spreadsheet.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. I will use that. Yep. You know, now as I'm looking over the list, it seems as there's a lot of things that could be combined.
Yeah, I mean, we just basically took all of the stuff that was listed, put it in here by how it's listed, and then alphabetized it.
Like, why is finance, insurance, and real estate different from business or professional office or business services, or I think I saw that. Yeah, we've got.
We have professional. Well, I said professional.
For instance, we have candy manufacturing with retail sales. Well, why don't we have any kind of manufacturing with retail sales?
Sure.
Because we have other kinds of things that are crafts. Which could be made on the premises, photographic studios and specialty shops.
We have bakery.
All right.
Almost
not. Everybody has the file, and we can think about some of the things we've talked about tonight and come back with more suggestions next time.
Let's make a motion to adjourn.
Was there any correspondence?
Correspondence.
Only what you got in on the back side of the minutes. There was the Connecticut Federation of Planning and Zoning and Officials newsletter.
Okay, thank you. All right. We have a motion to adjourn.
Jim Cropley, I second it.
All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Chair votes aye. Unanimous. And the meeting is closed at 8:56 p.m. Thank you all for sitting through this, and I think we made some important progress. Thank you.